Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
You like to ride your bike?
Yes, I do. I love to ride my bike. Yes. I do
too. It's a certain freedom when you ride your bike, when the wind is blowing and, you know, you're observing everything around you. You got your headphones on. It's a groovy feeling to ride a bike.
That's right. And I know that you shared that you got outdoors earlier today.
Girl, and got on them roller skates, but you should have seen me. I had my gear on. I had my elbow pads, my knee pads. And, you know, I used to be the one at the skating rink every Tuesday and every Saturday night. I was there. Ladies backwards, trios, wasn't none of that today. It was like survival.
I hear you, you know, and it's a good thing to keep moving, especially while we're in the middle of the pandemic, because it's so easy to just sit down and not move, especially if you can work from home. So it's always good to get outdoors.
And, you know, the movement also helps build your immunity and your enzymes. As long as you're not around much people, you know, it's great. What kind of bike do you have?
You know what? My husband, he gave me a used bike that actually belonged to one of his other family members. I'm not sure what kind of bike it is.
Is it like, you know, is it like a 10 speed? Like
it's that? Yes, it is a 10 speed.
Really?
Like, so I thought you were asking me like the brand. I can't remember the brand of the bike, but it's a 10 speed. Yes, it is.
Well, not me. I got a beach cruiser.
Oh my goodness.
Because I hook mine on the back of the truck and I take it out to the beach. You know, yeah. We got all these beaches here in San Diego. And I go, they have the long strand, but also I feel safe. I don't feel safe on the streets because people are not, you know, they're not paying attention. I always give them the right of way and they still whipping around corners and stuff. But you are whipping around a corner and it is a corner on the edge. Brains, you caught us in another great green room conversation. I'm here with Robin Wilson. She is amazing. Have you seen her on everything? Right, she is an educator and she teaches foreign language to students. She's a coach, she's an author, and I'm telling you, she has just gotten so many accolades and awards. Every time I see her, you know, they are acknowledging her for something, for the work that she does. So we're going to talk about that and more. Let's welcome her to the edge. Hi, Robin Wilson.
Hi, how are you doing, April?
Good. You going to ride your bike from Michigan down here to San Diego?
You know what? If it were possible, I would do that because I love to ride my bike, but I'm going to have to get on a plane to come and visit you.
Okay, and I'll have a bike here waiting for you when you come.
That sounds good.
So tell us a little bit about your story, your journey, and your truth.
Okay, where should I start? Well, I'll start with the present. So I am a wife, a daughter, a sister. I'm a children's author. As you mentioned earlier, I'm a teacher. I am an international motivational speaker, and I'm also the founder and CEO of Robin Wilson Educational Consulting, LLC. And I am so excited to be with you and your listening audience today, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Well, you know, it's all about children. I've been running a series and I really didn't think about that, but we've talked about everything from dyslexia to working with teenagers to sexual identity to, you know, how to discipline kids, how to get them off of that. But you teach foreign language and you assist them. I love that. I love that. Well, you know what? Yes, brains, I said it, you know, because usually that person is a person that has lived in that country or from that country, but you teach French.
That's
what else?
Right.
You teach more than one language too, don't you?
I actually, no, I don't, but I work in an environment where more than one language is taught. I actually teach at the Foreign Language Immersion and Cultural Studies School in Detroit.
Wow.
And I'm proud to be a DPSCD teacher because our school is not only unique to our state, it's one of only a handful in our state that are completely committed to teaching foreign languages. And then in terms of our country, in the United States, our school is among the few that stand out as a foreign language immersion school. And we're in an urban center. So we're located in Detroit, and we have scholars who come from different places from around the world. In fact, 2 years ago, I had a scholar that was in my class, and I was her first American teacher because she came from Nigeria, and her mother, or I should say her grandmother, shared with me that I was her first American teacher. So it's quite an honor to teach there. And I teach in the same classroom that my mentor teacher taught in when I was at the University of Michigan, Dearborn. And I love teaching kindergarten French. My scholars, we sing and dance to French music, and I'm teaching them right now how to count from 1 to 10. So they've learned how to count so far this year. They've learned how to count from 1 to 10. They know their basic greetings. So it's a journey. You know, I love sharing the language with my scholars, but I also learn from them because it's their first time, many of them being in school.
Right. And so they're, you know, they're being introduced to a different culture too, because you can't just teach them the language. You have to teach them about, you know, France and, you know, a little bit about the history and, you know, how that's impacted us here in the America. Here in San Diego, you know, what's pretty popular? Mandarin.
Okay.
There's about, I've seen about 5 or 6 schools, you know, because the world is changing. You better teach your kid something. Mandarin and Hindu. They are really teaching that. Yeah, they're teaching that a lot here. And in Africa, a lot of people speak French. They don't realize that. So, you know, I can see how that is definitely working in your favor. So how did you, French of all things, how did you get excited about that?
So I grew up in a primarily African-American community. I come from an African-American middle-class household. And in the community that I grew up in, there was a local nonprofit organization that was right around the corner from where I lived. And in the summer, they hosted summer camps for young people. Now, there was a woman who volunteered during the summer. She actually was a graduate student at that time. And it's funny that you mentioned Mandarin. She didn't speak Mandarin Chinese. However, she spoke Japanese. And I remember being 13 years old. And I remember she came and she taught us how to sing a song in Japanese. So again, music is a very powerful teaching tool. Absolutely. And I just remember, I still remember that song. And it's interesting the things that you remember. And that was really my first introduction, real introduction to foreign language learning. And it came through music. She taught us how to sing a song in Japanese. And my husband and I, we have a friend who actually, he works in Japan now. And when I first met him, when we were just dating, I talked about that experience that I'm sharing with you. I sung the song to him. He said, yes, that's right. He said it was correct. And that was the first time that I really had a formal introduction to any foreign language. And then I discovered French through music as well. There are some different artists that I like listening to even before I formally started learning the language.
Are they grooving there in France? Do they have some good stuff?
They have some good music. And, really? You know, they do like... He's not from France. He's from Belgium, but his name is Stromae, and he's from Belgium, and he speaks French, but he's really popular also in France, and he's a person of color, and he sings in French. He also knows some English, but primarily he is a French speaker and singer. So that's one of the artists that I really like. And then Les Nubiens. They are a sister duo, and they actually are also women of color, and they have been I should say they're like transplants because they've lived quite a few places, including France and even here in the United States, but they sing in French and in English. And I've actually had a chance to see them live in concert because my husband took me to see them when they came and performed here in Detroit. So they're pretty popular among a lot of people in France too, but there are so many different French artists and just,
I mean, you know, is it like a certain genre? Are they like more R&B? They more hip hop, you know, kind of reggae flair, or they have their own mix?
Rock is really popular there. Rock music is really popular. It's more so light rock. Light rock is really popular. They do have a couple of jazz festivals that go on throughout the year and like some major music festivals that take place. The Black Eyed Peas were there in Nice.
Oh, yeah.
When I was there, and I taught in France, in the south of France, during the summer. Yes.
Okay, yes you did, honey. And I know you was living fat, P-H-A-T. Because yes. The south of France is no joke. It's not Paris, brains. It's,
no, it is not.
It is a cut above.
It is. It's wonderful there. And, you know, the culture and everything that I learned while I was there, to answer your question, yes, I absolutely share that with my scholars. I think one of the things that they were pretty amazed about when I shared it with them as I told them, well, when you go to the movie theaters in the south of France, don't ask for popcorn with butter because you won't find it. And they said, Mrs. Wilson, there's no butter. And I said, there's butter in France, but there's just not butter and, you know, in the cinemas. Yeah, no. So your only choices are, you know, that is butter in French. It's either soule, which is salt in French, or sucre, which is sugar. And, wow. You know, if you ask them for butter, they will look at you and say, no, soule ou sucre. And they're telling you, you know,
salt or sugar.
Sugar. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is beautiful. You know, and I love how you call your students scholars.
Yes.
You're up-leveling them from the get-go.
Yeah.
It is the vernacular. It's how we talk to our children. It's how they learn. I always told my daughter that you are a queen, that you are beautiful, that you can do anything, that you are precious. You know, you have to ingrain that. I have a girlfriend that called her son a genius in the womb. And believe me, he is a genius.
Yeah.
And when you call them scholars, you are already setting them up for success.
That's right.
You know, and so the vernacular is so important. How, you know, the parents are, do you have a lot of students of color that attend your school or, you know, mixed demographic? Because I'm wanting, you know, I'm really wanting us to emerge in something different than quote unquote traditional education, which is now going awry with this critical race theory and all this other stuff that's going on. But I want to see some diversity there. Is your school pretty diverse?
I think that we have a good mix of scholars who come from different communities and backgrounds. Even locally, we have scholars who are children of color, and then we have scholars who are not. And I think that what really grounds us and brings us together is that we are a culture and a learning community that values language and culture. And so even in our hallways, if you walk through our school hallways, you will see where we have different things on display that represents the different cultures that are consistent with the languages that are being taught. You hear my colleagues are speaking the language to one another. We have Japanese, Chinese, French, and Spanish all taught within our building. And so we go from pre-K, because we actually do have pre-K at our school. So our school goes from pre-K to eighth grade. And it's really, I think, you know, it's really a place where we celebrate difference, and there is difference represented in our student body and in our staff, because I have some of my colleagues are from places like Spain or the Caribbean, and I've worked in many different settings, and it's very rare to have a staff made up of such diverse individuals from different right. places.
But so all of that equals love. All of that equals love.
Love, and, that's right.
And I tell people all the time, the more you travel, you mellow out. Mm-hmm. You become a much more well-rounded person.
That's right.
Because, you know, you think that you've seen poverty. Baby, I done seen some poverty.
Yes.
But opulence, I have seen some opulence too.
That's right.
And just, you know, in the middle. So it teaches you, and another thing, it teaches you to appreciate America.
Yes.
We over here, we fighting and arguing about some stupid stuff, but the world is a different place. And they're looking at us with a side eye.
That's right. I'm so glad that you said that, because that's actually one of the things that I came back to the United States really valuing about being American. For one, when you go abroad for the first time, and especially if you have a chance to stay for any amount of time, so longer than a week or two, and I was fortunate to be able to stay, you know, for a good amount of time in the south of France. But because of that, one thing that I really learned to appreciate is that I wasn't asked what kind of American I was. I was just asked what was my nationality. They just wanted to know where I was from. And they could tell from, I think, from my accent that I'm American. And whenever they would ask me, you know, what my nationality was, I would just say, je suis American. And then just understanding that, you know, we talked about education. Also, I came to understand that in France, while it's free to go to college, which is wonderful, if you have not been on a certain track starting in high school, then you're locked in to whatever direction you're pursuing after graduation. Because once you test out of high school and you move on to your college education, if that's what you decide to do, you are pretty much on a certain career path, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But as you know, here in America, we tend to change careers at least twice. You know, now today, most people, at least here within America and a lot of other places around the world, may change their career path at least once or twice in their lifetime.
I don't know how they're doing it, because the statistics I'm looking at, nobody wants to go back to work after COVID.
You know, there's a lot of entrepreneurs who have been born through this pandemic. And, you know, I think that's also a wonderful thing. But in France, it's really truly, if you went to school for a certain area of study and you've been working within a certain field for any amount of time, it's really, really hard to shift and pivot and choose another career path. If you are a teacher, when you are in your early 20s, chances are that you're going to be a teacher when you're in your 40s there. Mm-hmm. And that's just not something that is as commonplace here in the United States and some other places in the world, because now people have so many different options that they can, they're just so used to pivoting, but it's not necessarily easy to do that in some countries, and France is one of them.
Right, right. Well, you know, let's talk about the way that you have pivoted. You are not only an educator, but you are an author, you're a speaker, and you are a founder of your own educational platform. How did you, number one, how do you find the time to ride your bike?
You know what,
all of that, that's the first thing. And before you even answer, I want to thank you for your voice inflection, for your love, because there's something about elementary school, primary school teacher that sets the platform for the rest of your life. About 3 years ago, I saw my second grade teacher, Miss Day Roche. And let me tell you, she was a plump woman, but when she squeezed you, it was like, just, she was so soft. And she had this perfume, Blue Water, I think it was.
Okay.
Girl, she had the same perfume on. And she said, April, and she remembered me. Do you know I started to cry?
Oh my goodness.
I'm 59 years old. This woman has knew my name after 54 years.
Yes.
And there's something about a teacher, and it's so hard now because you can't love on the kids. Mm-hmm. Your teacher was your solace. Your parent was your disciplinarian and all this kind of stuff. You know, your grandparent was something else, but there was something about your teacher. Mm-hmm. And when you got something right and you pleased your teacher and she said, you know, job well done, and gave you a smiley face and gave you a hug. Oh my God, you just, you know, there was nothing like it. It's like a coach also. So number one, first question is, how are you able to, you know, reward and recognize and still nurture these young brains, these young scholars?
Yes. You know, I consider it an honor to work with them. I have kindergarten scholars. So they're 5 years old. Most of them already are 5 years old. I don't think I only have one who's four and getting ready to go on five, but they're 5 years old and they are bright. They are incredibly bright. And I think one of the things that I love most about teaching kindergarten is that they're curious about everything. Yep. When I say something to them, whether it be in French or in English, they're like, Mrs. Wilson, what does that mean? Or, you know, like there's just a natural curiosity that they have, and you can just build upon that for days. And you talked about your teacher, and I love that she remembered your name, because it's something about a teacher when they remember you, it just touches your heart. And, you know, I have moments where I have called my scholars, you know, sweetheart or, you know, sweetie pie, just when they're emotionally upset about something and I have to get down on their level. And I'm just like, can you tell me what's wrong? Or, you know, sweetie pie, what's going on? You know, and I just encourage them to use their words, because they know that I am tenderhearted, but at the same time, they also know by now you cannot win me over with your tears, because, you know, sometimes even at five, they already know how to manipulate with those tears, you know? So it's really important for me to have them to understand that what's valued is your words, not that it's not okay to be emotionally upset. Sometimes it's legitimate. You know, but then other times it's like, no, well, use your words. When you calm down and you're ready to use your words, I will listen to you. And so
how are you disciplining also in the classrooms? Because now what I've seen is the paradigm has really shifted. Girl, I was in the second and third grade. I'd be in there recess time writing standards.
Yeah.
I'd be done talk too much, but now they've incorporated emotional freedom technique, a little bit of yoga. You know, they are teaching mindfulness more so than this harsh discipline. They're teaching kids how to manage their emotions. So I appreciate you saying that, you know? Yeah, because they will show up and show out, girl.
That's
and
right.
We don't want these kids to be medicated, and they're quick to put away. Right. You know, here, I'm sure it sounds like your school is a private school, but...
No, it's actually a public school, but it is a test school. So our scholars do have to test to get into the school, but it is a part of our public school district. It is.
Well, you know, and that's great, because having that opportunity, you know, we have to go back and forth. Do we send our kids to charter school? Do we homeschool? Are we going to vaccinate them? Are we going to do this? Are we going to do that? The kids are confused. I saw some kids not too long ago that were homeschooled, and we were in Yosemite, and they were there. They were collecting the bugs. They were actually talking to the Native Americans. They were learning how to weave the baskets. I mean, it was just amazing. So school and education and choices have really changed. But girl, these parents got a rude awakening during COVID, because I couldn't do the math. I don't even know what they're doing. 1 + 1 = 2, but all these columns and all that kind of stuff. And the parents had no idea of who this little person actually is once they dropped them off for that 6 to 8 hours. They didn't know who they were, but they got a rude awakening.
Yes. And in most cases, that is true. And you know, one thing that I would say is I know here in the state of Michigan, our rates are starting to go back up. And, you know, our school is doing a really great job of making sure that everyone is adhering to wearing their mask, and we have to be tested every Wednesday to make sure that we are COVID free. And so if there is a need to quarantine, we can know right away so that individuals are not spreading the virus to others. And we have had about 50 cases this year alone in a building where we have nearly 800 people in our school building alone. And so what it has come down to is we are looking at transitioning on Fridays to have virtual learning for all of our scholars. The teachers will still more than likely come in. We have a choice of whether we stay home and teach online or come into the actual school building. I may opt to do that on most Fridays, just simply to have a quiet space to myself. But we may be looking at going back to online learning. And to be quite honest with you, I'm really hopeful that we can make it through this year without having to do that full time, because I think for many of our scholars, even though we're a testing school, we do have scholars who receive free or reduced lunch.
I was hearing about that is really where they get their main meals.
That's right.
Lunch, and that breaks my heart.
That's right.
That breaks my heart. And then when they get home, it's, you know, fast food or whatever. But I jumped around and I didn't let you answer the other questions. Tell me a little bit about your book. Let's start with that. Let me see the cover of it.
Okay, excellent.
Mama got rhythm and daddy got rhyme. Oh, yes. Boy.
Yes. So I know that we've talked a lot already about music and language learning, and music is just a wonderful teaching tool in general. It's one of the ways that I actually learn the language myself, and it's just enjoyable to listen to music. I use music in the classroom with my scholars. I think I shared that earlier today. Mm-hmm. And recently when my book was published, I played some jazz music for my kids. I play Trombone Shorty, who is one of my favorite jazz artists. He is awesome. He's from New Orleans. Then I also play more classic jazz. I play some Dizzy Gillespie for them. And they even at five can discriminate. So unfortunately, they didn't really care for Dizzy Gillespie, but they love Trombone Shorty.
But my music teacher, because I take guitar lessons, and
awesome.
And you know what? I did it. I found a beautiful guitar in the case for $25 at a yard sale. Girl, that thing sat over in the corner and looked at me and my daughter for about 2 years. And I said, uh-uh. And I did it, and it's no joke to try to remember your finger placement, muscle memory, to read the music, to strum, to sing, to keep... It's a lot, but it is stimulating my mind, because I don't want to go out, you know, like a marshmallow if I don't have to.
That's right.
The mind is a muscle. And with music, even with mathematics, depression, anxiety. So my drum teacher, because I play congos too, but the teacher teaches mathematics, and these kids are killing it in school because of the drumming. So music is so powerful. It is a language within itself.
That's right. I completely agree with you. And one of the reasons that I wrote my book, Mama Got Rhythm, Daddy Got Rhyme, is because I grew up in a musical household. It sounds like maybe perhaps you did too, because of all of that.
Yeah, my brother played with Quincy Jones and the Beatles and Michael Jackson. So music has always been an influence. My mama couldn't hold a note in a paper bag.
That's okay. She fostered your love of music.
She did. And the classical music. I could never get with Theodosius Monk. Uh-huh. I couldn't follow it. I didn't know where he was going with that. And traditional jazz. But the more I listen to it, again, it is a language within itself.
It truly is. And, you know, we wouldn't have the music that we have today, like the R&B music that we have today, if it wasn't for the influence of jazz. And that's one of the aims of my book, is to really help young people to understand how jazz helped influence their music, which in a lot of cases is R&B. There's so many different types of music that I know young people listen to today. But if we really trace the history of the music, a lot of the music, you can trace it back to jazz, whether it be in the improvisation or the bass or the rhythms that you hear in jazz. You can hear those same types of rhythms or those same strings or those same beats in different types of music. And music has evolved, and I think it will continue to evolve, but I absolutely wanted young people to know about the different jazz artists that helped pave the way. And Jasmine is the main character in the story, and her parents take her to a jazz museum in New York City, and they take her around the museum and help her to understand a little bit about each jazz artist, and she hears their music and she starts to really connect her music with what she perceived to be her parents' music. And I think that it's a story that a lot of children can relate to, because how often do kids listen to their parents' music sometimes and think, what are you listening to?
Well, you know what? My father was, Frank Sinatra. My daughter loves Frank Sinatra.
Oh, that's awesome.
But the music
awesome.
Today, now, is different. Now.
Yes.
I was just with Howard Hewitt the other day, and I'm listening. He is a balladeer. His voice is an instrument. There's lyrical content. There's no misogyny. There's no cursing. There's no degradation. They talking about more than they gold, they car, and they drugs. I just don't understand where music is going today. I love it to go. I will not go to a concert if you playing a track. If I see that you not, I'm giving you all this money because it's expensive.
That's right.
Go to a concert and you playing a track. No. I need to see the band. I want you. My husband gets mad when they put the mic out to the audience. He said, I didn't pay to sing. I paid to watch you sing.
Yes.
But you get so into it, and music just really takes you, it transcends you through time. It can take you in the past. It sparks a memory. It can make you angry. It can make you happy. It can make you fall in love and get you pregnant.
Yes. Music, those love songs, you gotta be careful about those love songs.
But I don't hear them anymore.
Yes.
I really don't hear them like I used to. You're a prominent speaker, so you have gotten so many awards and accolades here lately. I'm telling you, you are just popping up everywhere. What's that all about?
You know what? This has been an amazing and incredible year. I'm so thankful. I have had so many different opportunities. I had an opportunity to speak on an international platform virtually for Chimera Youth's Fit for Purpose event. And I spoke on the topic of literacy and how fathers can actually encourage literacy in their households. Often we think of mothers as being the primary individual within the household who's carrying out the task of helping their children with their homework or going to parent-teacher conferences, but we often forget that our fathers play an important role too. And I know there are a lot of incredible men and incredible fathers out there. And I really, since it was around Father's Day, I really wanted to take a moment to honor them and to just share some of the knowledge and the wisdom that I have around literacy and how they could use different strategies to promote literacy within their household for early childhood development. So that was an honor. I was really honored to speak with Chimera Youth Fit for Purpose. And then earlier this year, I also had an opportunity to honor one of my mentors who I've known since I was 13 years old. I had an opportunity to give a speech on, again, literacy, because that's my area of expertise.
Right.
And I had a chance to honor her at an event that I spoke at in April. And that was exciting. So those are just two of the major events that I've spoken at this year. And then I became the executive contributor that writes on literacy and leadership for Brains Magazine, which is an international, yes, Brains, Brains Magazine, that's right. And it's just, I've enjoyed, I've only been writing for them since September, so that's fairly new, but writing, I've been writing for more than 10 years. And so to be able to write for an international magazine on topics that I'm passionate about and that I have a background in, that's exciting.
It is exciting, and you're doing an amazing job. Literacy Brains, I want to reach out to the ones that are not literate. There are so many people in this country that cannot read. I mean, you look at R. Kelly, bless his heart. Can't read. You got all this money, all this, but you cannot read the contract. But it's never too late to learn. And understanding what your learning style is. Because I was dyslexic. My daughter was dyslexic. Mm-hmm. And how do you explain dyslexia if you've never read before? Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't severe. She wasn't severe, but it was severe enough to cause us to have challenges with spelling. And then if you didn't spell, my daughter would be in the classroom and they called me one day and they said, well, Mrs. Mahoney, you know, Chanel is just not, you know, functioning. Maybe she has, you know, this or that or that. And I'm saying, no, I'm not seeing any of these signs or symptoms. It's not like, you know, it can't be possible. I said, but what is it? So I sat her down. I said, you know, what's going on? She says, well, mommy, the kids laugh because I don't read as fast as they do. And then I turn the pages really fast because I'm trying to catch up. But then the teacher asked me a question and I can't answer it because I didn't read it.
Yeah.
And I said, well, baby, what, you know, what's going on? She said, you know, like when you see the cartoon and the cat hits the, no, the bird hits the cat over the head and all those little Tweety birds start swirling around. And I was like, yeah. She says, well, when I look at the words, that's how I feel. Yeah. The child was having vision problems.
Hmm.
She could, okay. I, you know, I was like, what's going on? I put her in Sylvan Learning Center. I don't even know if they're still open, but shout out to them. It was $46 an hour for tutoring, but baby, in 6 months, that child was at her grade level and then some.
Yes.
I got her that Harry Potter book. I was overwhelmed. She read the entire thing. She is an avid reader now. So parents, it is about engaging your child and trying to find out what is their learning style, what is their challenge.
That's right.
Work with the teacher. The teachers, yes, you know, in some situations they are overwhelmed. There's no aid in there. They have, you know, 20 kids. They can't give them all individualized attention. But sit down, because I was sitting down with her and I could hear that she could not break up and the syllabication. She was like me. She couldn't hear the sounds. And I was like, wow. So pay close attention. If you are a parent that is not an avid reader, pick up a book.
Yes.
It will transcend you. It's great. Play some great music, classical music. Oh, I love classical music. It makes me feel so smart. It stimulates the brain. Give them a music lesson. Work with great people like Robin Wilson. You know, she's got a foundation that is really focused on education. I know that there's tons of online materials that she can share with you that you can use, but our kids are behind the curve when it comes to other countries. We used to be at the top. Now we are sloppy seconds, okay? The Chinese, the Indians, the Koreans are taking the world by storm. And what are we going to do? We can't even speak the language. So thank you, Robin, for everything that you're doing, because you are really, really in the mix. And I appreciate you and I value you as an educator. Teachers and nurses are my favorite people on the planet.
Thank you so much, April. And thank you for sharing that too. I know that actually in October, I wrote an article for Brains Magazine about learning about my dyslexia later in life. And
see?
I think that, that we talked about
it's very common.
It's common, but it's something that can be overcome. Granted, once you know that you're dyslexic, I think that it does allow you to access certain resources to really get the help that you need. It's a learning spectrum disorder. So it doesn't go away, but it can be overcome. And I think that you, your daughter, and myself are just prime examples of that, that it doesn't mean that you cannot be successful, but you definitely have to get early intervention as much as possible. Early intervention is key, because if you don't have the proper support, it makes it very challenging.
It makes you show out in class. So when your child is disruptive, check that out. Look a little bit deeper. Okay, if there's something going on at home, is there some sort of abuse? Are they not eating? Are they not sleeping? They have a learning challenge? Maybe they might need medication, but you want to look at this. How are, you know, are you teaching them emotional freedom technique? Are you teaching them yoga, how to calm down? Are you whooping them and hollering and cussing at them? That's not going to get it done. You're going to raise an angry, hostile, ignorant adult. That's not what you want, brains. So slow down, really think about it, you know, and process all of this. It's a lot. It's a lot to raise children. You know, I had one woman on my show the other day, she had 9. Girl, I had to scratch my head on that. I don't know how you do it.
It takes a village.
It takes a village. To raise one child. Do you have children?
No, you know, my husband and I, we do not have children. So my kiddos, my scholars, my kindergarten scholars, they are like my kids. I know they're not my kids, but, you know, they are like my kids because I spend the majority of my day with them.
Right.
And I can tell you, like, their temperaments. I know their personalities. I know when they're telling me the truth and when they're not telling me the truth.
And the thing is, you are their mother, and you are going to be with them like their mother the rest of your life. Because I'm telling you, when I saw Ms. DeRochet and I squeezed that little butter, It was nothing like it. It was nothing like it. It brought back so many memories, and you are creating lifelong memories. And I thank you for that. Can we purchase your book on Amazon?
Yes, you can actually purchase my book on Amazon. Mama Got Rhythm, Daddy Got Rhyme is on Amazon.com, Barnes and Noble. And you can also purchase it on Bookshop as well.
Okay, well, I need you guys to go and get it. That's a great stocking stuffer, or just, you know, a quiet time. Just to sit down and, you know, talk to your kid, spend some quality time with them, get inside their head, beat that drum inside their head.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Tell us how to get in contact with you too, Robin Wilson.
Yes, you can visit me at my website is www.robinmichellewilson.com. So that's www.robinmichellewilson.com. And you can also reach me at The Resolute Strategist at robinmichellewilson.com.
Okay, brains, do it for yourself too. You know what? And don't be embarrassed. You could be 40 years old and not know how to read. I just read in the paper not too long ago, there was a woman that was 80 years old, just graduated from college. You know, 70-year-old man just learned how to read the Bible. It's never too late.
It's never too late.
It's never too late. And I'm telling you, it opens up a window of opportunity. Thank you so much for being here on The Edge with me and my brains, Robin Wilson. You are a queen of everything education. I am going to be following you, sharing you, liking you, and loving on you from afar.
Thank you so much. And I hope that you have a wonderful day. Take care, April.
All right. Bye, brains.
Bye.